Luke chapter 16, and we read from the verse 11. Luke 15, and the verse 11. Now this is the famous and outstanding story of the prodigal son. We'll say something about that in a few minutes. And Jesus said, a certain man had two sons. And the younger of them said to his father, Father, give me the portion of goods that falleth to me. And he divided unto them his living. And not many days after, the younger son gathered all together and took his journey into a far country, and there wasted his substance with riotous living. And when he had spent all, there arose a mighty famine in that land, and he began to be in want. And he went and joined himself to a citizen of that country, and he sent him into his fields to feed swine. And he would fain have filled his belly with the husks that the swine did eat, and no man gave unto him. And when he came to himself, he said, How many hired servants of my fathers have bread enough and to spare, and I perish with hunger? I will arise and go to my father, and will say unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and before thee, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. Make me as one of thy hired servants. And he arose and came to his father. But when he was yet a great way off, his father saw him, and had compassion, and ran, and fell on his neck, and kissed him. And the son said unto him, Father, I have sinned against heaven and in thy sight, and am no more worthy to be called thy son. But the father said to his servants, Bring forth the best robe, and put it on him, and put a ring on his hand, and shoes on his feet, and bring hither the fatted calf, and kill it, and let us eat and be merry. For this my son was dead and is alive again. He was lost and is found. And they began to be merry. And the Lord will bless the reading from his word. I suppose a lot of the content of the story centers around this person we call the prodigal son. But the emphasis of the story is not upon that at all. This is the last in a trilogy of stories. And the emphasis is not really upon the lostness of the son, although that is brought out in the story. The emphasis is on the forgiveness of the Father. The emphasis on the three stories is how the lost was found, how the lost was brought home and restored to the proper place. It's certainly the story of the prodigal boy. It's the story of the pardoning Father. And there is another story after it of the proud son. And I may speak on the proud son on some occasion before I go. But tonight we want to look at this particular portion of the chapter and look into the story and find out a few things that we can apply in our own situation and to our own condition. Lots of people think that far off fields are more green than the fields at home. Far off fields often do look greener than those that are near. But far off fields, when we reach them, are not always the pastures that we thought. And this young man discovered, and tragically discovered, that the far country wasn't as good as he thought. I want you to look with me, first of all, at the waywardness of this foolish child. First of all, we look at the portion of goods. This young man discovered that he had a birthright. It dawned upon him one day that when his father passed away, there would be coming to him a portion of the father's estate. He was the younger son. He was not going to get the major portion, but he was going to get a considerable amount out of the estate. The discovery dawned upon him and fired his mind and fired his heart and fired his spirit and his imagination. Discovery that was to change the course of his life. And tragically changed the course of his life. When he discovered that he had a birthright, that he had a claim upon certain properties that his father now had in his possession, he made a demand. This young man just went to the father and he demanded the portion of goods that would fall to him. He went to the father and asked him outright that he get for his own use what would be coming to him when the father left this scene of time. The story brings it out quite clearly that this young man felt that he should have now instead of in the future. He wished the deployment of his own birthright. He did not wish the father to say how and when he could spend the goods that belong to the father's house and pertain to the father's treasures. Not for him the pie in the sky when he died. You know, we get fellas, and they come to us and they say, "Oh, not a pie in the sky when you die. I don't want any pie in the sky when I die. I want my pie here." And the proof of the pudding is in the eating. And this fellow discovered that it had been better he had left the pie alone. It would have been better if he'd waited, perhaps. But he thought he would deploy the goods that the father had. And there are so many, and they say that they have a birthright, that they have been brought into this world, that it was not their will that they came upon this scene of time. And they say that they have a right to govern their own lives. And they have a right to do whatever they like with the gifts that God has given. And they would turn to God and say, "God, I will use the gifts that you have given me in my own way. I wish to be the master of my fate and the captain of my soul." There are many. And they, because of the sinful nature of their hearts, wish to paddle their own canoe, as we would say, and to steer their own lives and take the very gifts that God has bestowed upon them, use them in the way that their own sinful heart dictates. Maybe you are here tonight and you've taken the good things that God has given you. Perhaps God has given you a body strong and well. Perhaps God has given you a mind
that can think and think deeply. Perhaps God has given you some other gift or some talent and you're using it for yourself and you're living in sin. You're not in the hands of the Lord. Turn your back like the prodigal and say, I've got all that I need. I have got all that will see me through. The Duke of Edinburgh, some years ago, and looking on the achievements of man and the gifts that God had given man had been used to bring advancement in technology, he said that man no longer needed God. Using the very blessings that God has given to defy the Almighty. This young man then proceeded to the far country. The lust of possession got a hold of him. And I can see him there as he gathers all together and he fills his bag and he fills his pockets with the money that the father had given to him, and the lust of possession took over. It's all mine. It all belongs to me. The father has no longer any claim upon it. He gathers it all together. It's all me. It's all self from here on. There are many people who have the lust of possession. They say everything is mine. I own it. It belongs to me. Don't you ever forget that God can close his hand and you end up with nothing. Even if we were to the believers here, if God closes his hand, he could leave the fields empty. No herd in the stall, no flock in the pasture, no fruit on the vine. And if God were to snap the brittle thread of life, you'd be back where you started the stuff. Lust of possession, the lordship of his life. Oh, he was now the master. He was the one who could go where he liked and do what he liked. You talk nowadays about doing your own thing. You know what that is? That's the prodigality of the human heart. It is an expression of the sinful nature of mankind. And even our older people, while they may not use the expression, are still saying in another manner that they will do their own thing. And it doesn't matter what God says. You are the Lord of your own existence. Liberty of expression. We live in a day when the devil has got the upper hand. Even in our kindergarten schools, they now talk about giving liberty of expression to the children. I think if there was more liberty of expression with a cane, it wouldn't do some of them any harm. I tell you, when you got a couple across your hand for misbehaving on a cold, frosty morning, you didn't want it for a while again. It's all liberty of expression. It's all an indication of the opposition to the Christ of God. From their earliest days, it's being put into them, and there is a subtle scheme abroad. And when it comes to the time when they can understand anything, they get put into them the spirit of liberty and license. Then they're out into the world and they're rock music. The greatest curse the world has seen. The expression of Satan in the midst of society. Damn it! and ruining and wrecking and leaving many of our young people on the scrap heap
before their time, and leading them down to the darkest pit of hell.
Did you ever go soft in the music of today? Rough music of the age. Inspired from the darkest hell. It was thought up not by the rough producers. It was thought up in the mind of satanic power.
We find liberty of expression.
Of course, you've even religion. We want to express our worship in our own way. So we have churches that use the name of God and use the name of Christ and use certain forms, and all they are doing is saying to God, we will express ourselves in the manner we feel.
That's as big a sin as anything else.
You come to God and worship Him through Jesus Christ, as Savior, Redeemer, and Lord.
Liberty of expression, the far country.
That's it.
There are many living in the far country. I wonder what about you, sir?
The prodigality of his loving, the worldliness of his pleasure. Oh, he got there and he saw the bright light. He heard the music. He danced along the floor.
Of course, I could never see anything in this dancing anywhere. I played soccer, and I always tried to get a ball into a net somewhere. But I used to look into dance halls and see them go around the floor. I never could see them going anywhere. They always need to go back to where they started.
Worldliness, of course that's the world that goes around in circles anywhere. Pleasure of the world. Oh, he thought, this is great. I'll get away from home. I'll throw off the restraints of the Father's house. I'll break the ties that bind. And I can indulge in all the pleasures of the world and throne.
Papa, he'll not be able to say you can't do it. I'll be away. I tell you, young people, you should thank God that you've got a home that controls you.
You want to just thank God, even though you might chaff at it now.
You'll look back and say, thank God that my father and my mother kept me right, or I'd have been down the wrong road.
Mark Twain,
the American humorist, he kicked over the traces when he was a young man.
He thought home was too restraining. And he left home, he said, when he was 16. And he used to have talks with his father. He said, I left home when I was 16, and the old fella didn't know very much. He says, I went out into the world and I knocked about the world for about 6 years. And he said, I decided I would go home. And I went home and had a conversation with the old fella, and it was wonderful what he had picked up in the meantime. Yeah. We think the old boys with a grey head, their nose with a shiny pit, don't know very much. You think it just appeared from nowhere. Well, I want to tell you, young people, they have been the way of this world, and they know that the pleasures of this world are but for a season. And you older people who are not saved, you don't know Christ, you're still living in worldly pleasure. You're still living for the things of time and sense. And this young man was wanton in his practice. He indulged himself to the full. What's it to do today? We were speaking in the car yesterday, and I was asking our brother Bob Bagwell there, did he know what it meant, mutton dressed up as lamb? And you don't know that expression. Well, you know, this spirit is amongst the older people. And that really means if you see an older lady,
who is trying to look like a young one that's mutton dressed up as lamb.
Mutton dressed up as lamb. Surely we have. We want to enter into the spread of the age. And they're fools. There's a lot of us fools and don't know it. Maybe you're a fool tonight. Whose fool are you? The story's told about man who went down the street with a billboard in front of him, and it said on it, "I'm a fool for Christ." And of course, coming up, they all. And he walked on, and when they turned round, he had another billboard on his back, and it said, "But whose fool are you? Whose fool are you? Wasting your life, throwing away the gifts of God, living out of Christ, unsaved." That's the prodigal's life. That's how we look at the want of the far country. The stark facts are there for all to see. How foolish could this young man be to set out with the opportunities before him? But it was opportunity without the Father's house. It was opportunity apart from the Father's care. And all the foolishness of it, it says, he spent all. All! And you without Christ are spending all your time, all your talents, all your gifts, and someday at the end of it all you'll be left with nothing in a Christless eternity. To spend all and end up with nothing is the biggest foolishness of all. Tell me, friend, are you spending all for self and sin, but not for Christ? The famine of the far country. Oh, when he went there at first, everything seemed to be so good. The far country was great. He could eat, drink, and be merry, and it seemed as if he had plenty. Until one day, famine hit the far country. David was no fool. The psalmist David, he lived a life that taught him that the pleasures of sin are but for a season, and there's famine in the far country for he who follows the path of sin. The far country at the end of the day has nothing to offer. He found himself famishing. He hadn't a bite to eat, nothing to drink. And my Bible tells me that Jesus threw aside the curtain one day. And he opened that window that looked into eternity. He said there was a rich man and he fared sumptuously every day. And a beggar lay at his gate full of sores and the dogs came and licked the sores. And the beggar died. And he was carried into Abraham's bosom. But the rich man died. And they brought in the mortician. And they got the best casket they could. And they bought the best flowers that could be purchased. And they gathered all the most society people they could find. And they walked to the burying place in great pomp. But his soul was in hell. And he who had fared sumptuously every day found there wasn't even a drop of water to cool his tongue. And you could live through this life without Christ. But when you go to a lost sinner's hell, there's no water to cool the tongue. I don't believe in hell today. Don't believe in hell. Ooh, that
That's a preaching of a bygone age.
That hell was real in Jesus' day. It's just as real today. And if Jesus said it, I accept it. And you can live your life without God. And you can live your life without Christ. And you can finish up in a lost eternity. The far country. Oh, the fickleness of his friends. Well, we're all around him, surely, when he went to the far country. Hello, how are you doing? Where do you come from? Oh, you come from there, gentlemen. What does your father do? Oh, my father has a farm, such and such a thing. Is your father good to you? Oh, I got the portion of good father left, gave to me, that I would get when he died. I decided to take them now and come down here amongst you. Oh, that's great. Let's have a drink. Come on ahead. We'll go to the theatre. Come on, we'll go to the dance. Come on, we'll have the time of our lives. Ah, come on, here, so-and-so has just come from the backwoods of the country. He's just come down here to this far country. Hello there, how are you doing? And they were all around him, till one day he had nothing left. And they're all gone. Gone. And the world left him. Stripped him! Robbed them! I tell you, friends, the only friend you can depend on is the friend of publicans and sinners. He never leaves you nor forsakes you. And if you have nothing, he loves you just the same, because you haven't anything anyway. Loves you just the same. Oh, the fickleness of the world! And if he would fain have filled his belly with the husk that the swine did. A Jew sitting among the pigs. The unclean animal. He was down to the depths. Friends, sin brings men to the depths. And there are people sitting in this meeting this evening. Perhaps in a day to come, sin will have brought you to the depths. Have you ever read the books of Dempster? He was a Methodist minister some years ago in England. God called him to a special ministry amongst the down and outs. And people used to write to him and say, "My son has disappeared. Can you find him? My daughter has disappeared. My husband, my wife has disappeared. Can you find this person?" And he was in the great metropolis. God guided him on many an occasion. Tells the story how he had got a letter about a prodigal son. He was walking down the street one day and he saw a young man, unshaven, with ragged clothes, his head bowed, his shoulders stooped, and a look of forlornness about his whole person. And something struck him. And he said, "I'll go and speak to this young man." And he went up and he tapped the young man on the arm. He said, "Young man, I'd like to speak with you." He said, "Leave me alone." But he walked on and he put his arm through the arm of the shabby coat. He said, "Young man, I'll walk away with you. You'll not walk with me." He said, "Leave me alone." Well, he walked on and he started to speak to the young man about the things of God. They were passing the gates, the ornamented gates of a great college. The young man stopped all of a sudden, and with fierceness in his eyes and with venom in his voice, he looked at the preacher and he pointed to the gates and the great edifice behind him. He said, "Do you see that place?" He said, "That's where I was educated." And he says, "Look at me now. Look at me now." He said, "Yes, look at you now. But whose fault was it?" It's the fault of your sin. And he led the young man to Christ. And he found out he was a young man whom the parents had written about with many tears and prayer. And he led him to the Savior and to the Father's house. Sin ruins men. When I was a young preacher in Bible college, it was my opportunity to go to what is known as the lodging houses in Edinburgh. You've heard of the great stories of the Covenanters and of the Grass Market burnings. And just across from where the martyrs were burnt, where the little memorial is in the ground, there are lodging houses. And in those lodging houses are down and out. And I remember as a young preacher being sent there every second Sunday to preach the Word of God. And they were all sitting round the table smoking and gambling and playing cards and reading newspapers. And we stood up on a platform and we preached the Word of God. They didn't pay much attention, but the Word was there. Just the same. Over yonder was a doctor. Over yonder was a university professor. Sitting yonder was a surgeon with trembling hands who never would use the knife again unless God did a miracle in his life. And all around was the marks of thank God we were able to tell them of Jesus and His love. Tell the poor down and outs and the up and outs that Jesus saved. Thank God He does. Thank God the Lord is able to save to the uttermost. You say, "Ah, but Mr. Cook, that'll never happen to me." Never happen to me! How do you know? But I'll tell you worse. To lose your wealth is much. To lose your health is more. But to lose your soul is such a loss as nothing can restore. And to live without Christ is to be lost. Thank God one day he sat down and he came to himself. That's a good thing. He came to himself. You know, the trouble with many people is they never come to themselves. Never see themselves. But he looked that day. And what did he see? He saw a prodigal amongst the swine. He saw the filth of the far country. He saw the rags in which he was clothed. Dear friend, the first thing on the way to salvation is to see yourself as God sees you. And God looks beyond the outward appearance and He looks in the heart and He sees a poor lost soul. You may be well dressed. You may be respectable and religious. But underneath are the rags. Even the rags of self-righteousness. For all our righteousnesses, said Jeremiah, are as filthy rags. You're only a prodigal when it comes to God. He said, I'd arise and go to my father. And the father was there to meet him. Oh, it's the old, old story. Away down the road, the father's eyes spotted him. He ran and fell on his neck and kissed him. And he freely forgave his sin. My dad, he's 87. He preached the gospel for over 40 years. He was saved through the famous evangelist, the Reverend W.P. Nicholson. Saved from a life of sin. Before I was born. Older members of the family remember my mother carrying him up the stairs. in his drunken state. But God saved. Lifted him out of the mud and the mire. For 43 years and 5 months, he preached the gospel of Christ and led souls to the sea, to the Father's house. He preached until he took his first stroke, and then his speech prevented him preaching. But he has two sons.